Micro Europa.
Sounds.
Moderno. Fiche.
Terrific.
Micro Europa.
Sounds.
Comme moi.
Como eu.
Like me.
Micro Europa.
Bringing young Europe together.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer besonderen Ausgabe unseres Mikroeuropa-Live-Talks hier im freien Radio Wüstewelle auf der 96,6 und auch als Livestream im Internet. Mein Name ist Julian Scherer und ich bin wissenschaftlicher Mitarbeiter im Institut für Medienwissenschaft der Universität Tübingen und moderiere die heutige Sendung. Diese entsteht im Rahmen des internationalen Workshops zum Thema Fake News, der vom 14. bis 17. Dezember 2017 hier im Institut für Medienwissenschaft und im Zentrum für Medienkompetenz der Universität Tübingen stattgefunden hat. Der Workshop fand im Rahmen des INSPIRE-Projektes der EU statt. Das steht für Innovative Educational Media Practices for an Inclusive and Participatory Europe. Zu Deutsch heißt das Innovative Bildungs- und Medienpraktiken für ein inklusives und mitwirkendes Europa. Wie der Titel des Programms schon vermuten lässt, wird die heutige Sendung mehrsprachig ablaufen. Die Diskussionsgrundlage wird auf Englisch sein, aber ich werde mich bemühen, einzelne Sinnabschnitte der Diskussion für die deutschsprachigen Hörer zusammenzufassen. Zu Gast bei mir im Studio sind heute Martin Giesler und 4 Studierende und Schüler aus Belgien, Spanien und Rumänien. Ich darf Sie alle ganz herzlich begrüßen. A warm welcome to all of my guests. Martin Giesler ist Journalist, Blogger und wissenschaftlich engagiert. Er beschäftigt sich mit dem digitalen Wandel und dessen Konsequenzen für Medien, Wirtschaft, Politik und Gesellschaft. Neben seiner Arbeit im Matrix-Projekt der Uni Göttingen betreibt Martin den Social Media Watchblog, der Interessierte via Newsletter über wichtige News und Debatten rund um Social Media versorgt. Hallo Martin!
Hallo Julian.
Schön, dass du da bist. Dann haben wir noch Ostiane aus Brüssel bei uns. Sie studiert am Institut des Études de Communication Sociale im Master und beschäftigt sich mit politischer Lobbyarbeit. Bonjour Ostiane.
Bonjour.
Dann haben wir noch Ovidiu aus Klausenburg, Rumänien hier. Er macht seinen Doktor in Virtual and Augmented Reality und unterrichtet TV-Workshops. Salut,
Ovidiu. Hello, Ovidiu.
Darüber hinaus haben wir noch Jaime aus Madrid, Spanien hier. Er macht dort gerade sein Abitur. Hola, Jaime.
Hola, hola.
Hola. Und zum Schluss haben wir noch Julien aus Mechelen, Belgien hier. Sie studiert Journalismus. Dach, Julien.
Dach.
In unserem ersten Teil möchten wir uns mit der Frage, was eigentlich Fake News beschäftigen und welche Arten von Fake News es eigentlich gibt. So, before we dive into our discussion, I'd like to discuss fake news as a term. Throughout the workshop, there has always been a vivid discussion about what fake news actually are. Martin, since you are our expert, I'd like to start the discussion with you. In your opinion, or in your opening keynote to the workshop, you said that there is no real definition of fake news. Could you shortly elaborate on that?
Yeah, if it comes to fake news, then you always encounter the problem that there's really no clear definition of what it actually means. If you think about Donald Trump, for instance, he's calling the media fake news all the time, but he doesn't really say what it actually means. So there are a whole lot of definitions of fake news. For example, it might be some form of satire, it might be some form of misleading information, it might be some fraudulent content, and it's not really clear what people actually mean when they use the term fake news. And this is a problem, because when you don't really know what you're talking about with each other, then you don't get anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. That's a huge problem. So what do the others think? Maybe Ovidiu, what do you think are fake news?
Well, for me, fake news is, from my perspective, I've seen fake news just in the form of satire, because I tend to veer off from the real fake news. So those which promote fake, unrealistic and fraudulent information. But satire is kind of a fake news, but it's fake news done with a humoristic approach, scientific approach, because you have to do some real research on reality to be able to find the humor and the irony in reality. So that's why, for example, The Daily Show, which aired for 16 years, did, I think, the best pieces of news, although they're called satire. So it doesn't matter if you use humor, if you find the flaws in reality, you find the stupidity of people, then you discover them by exaggerating, and that's how you make people aware of the fact that reality is in one way, but exaggerating it makes it look real.
Mm-hmm. Ostiane, what do you think are fake news for you?
I mean, for me, fake news might be misleading information shared by someone who would have different intentions. So it might be to earn money, or behind this, sometimes there are politicians or firms that have sometimes interests. So in order to earn money or sell more, or sometimes to gain more votes in their elections. So for me, it would be basically this and more, but it's part of the definition.
Mm-hmm. All right. So when we now look at the different kinds of fake news, we should first of all acknowledge that there is the term has been used in an inflationary manner. So as we said, in its core, fake news are active in the distribution of false information. So we're all clear on that. So I read an article by the Observer who offers four different kinds of fake news. The actual fake news that are completely made up, fake news that are actually satire, as you said, and poorly reported news that fit an agenda, and misleading news designed to promote a narrative. So for us here, do you think this is it's that simple to say those are the four ways of thinking about fake news? Martin, do you want to start?
Well, I mean, the definition by the Observer is quite a good starting point, but I think it's a term that's changing all the time. So you really want to look at the quality of that fake news, because, or at least not of the quality, but of the quantity of fake news as well. Because in my opinion, there isn't that much fake news circulating, but it's spread so widely via social media. So it's in terms of quantity, there's not that much fake news right now. But social media platforms make it really, really easy to have them spread. And so the definition and the term of fake news is constantly changing, and you always have to kind of look at the context where people are actually encounter fake news.
Okay, Julien, do you want to add something to that?
I think in Belgium we don't have a lot of fake news, so the fake news that we are seeing is also from America and other countries. Like propaganda, maybe in I've been to Jerusalem.
Okay.
And you have.
All right, so Belgium is quite different.
Yeah.
So we talked about the satirical aspects of it, and within the workshop, there has been a focus on satirical news and their way of informing its audiences. Let's listen to a clip that has been produced during the workshop.
What if satirical news has become the only real source of information? What if satirical news has become more reliable than mainstream media? In some countries, that is already the case.
On June 23rd, 2016, Britain voted to leave the EU in a historical referendum. Since then, Brexit has become the perfect topic for British satire.
With publications like Private Eye achieving a readership of over 200,000 in late 2016, the public are turning to satire as an alternative to traditional British press.
There used to be a time when we listened to politicians and laughed at comedians, and now we do the complete opposite. Satire news combines humor and irony to expose or criticize the stupidity or flaws of public individuals or real-life scenarios. Times New Roman from Romania or The Daily Show in the US have become icons of the genre, and their audience is better informed than those who rely on conventional media.
So, the clip strongly promotes satirical news as a way of being informed and entertained at the same time. What do you think that says about classical journalism in a society that rather laughs at political news items? Doesn't it make audience feel like politics aren't worthwhile anymore?
No. Not at all. Seriously,
Martin,
not in any way. Because I think any way you are trying to deal with politics is good. Whether it's satire, whether it's a newspaper, whether it's a radio show or TV or whatever. But you really want to be suspicious about what you're consuming. So you really want to try to find out what is the motivation of that radio show, what is the motivation of the politician telling me something. And this ought to be mandatory for like everybody who is consuming news. So I wouldn't want to judge on the way or the format people consume news, but rather encourage people to be suspicious about it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. What video do you want to add to that?
Yeah. I was informed about the U.S. elections due to the Daily Show, due to the Stephen Colbert report, due to any American TV host which did satire, because they presented all of the public. So you have Trump, you have Hillary, you have Sanders, and all of the others which quit along the way. But Having satire doesn't mean you have to laugh at the subject. You have to be informed on the subject. So after watching a piece, if you're interested about what Trump said for real, so you're suspicious, like Martin said, you could go to his website, you could go to Wikipedia, you could Google it. Mm-hmm. But satire is more like the stepping stone of being interested in a subject. For me, without satire, I wouldn't be interested in the U.S. elections because it's not involving me directly. It's not affecting me directly then. But now, having seen what Trump did, I think Romania is affected. I think the Europe is affected. I think the world is affected by his policies. So that's why knowing his policies explained in a humorous way would be a great way to understand and explain to other people. Have you seen what Trump did? Have you seen what he said?
Hammer, do you want to add to that for Spain?
In the case of Spain, in Spain nowadays, there are a lot of fake news circulation about the political conflict in Catalonia. Mm-hmm. And both sides are taking profit to the fake news, are taking profit. Mm-hmm. In Spain, all the media have choose which side and they support, and it is a really complex conflict that needs a sophisticated, complex analysis, but this is very difficult. Mm-hmm. With an environment of competitive media always looking the breaking news.
Yes, of course. And then, as you said, satirical news is a way of providing this. So, an dieser Stelle dann für unsere deutschen Zuhörer eine kurze Zusammenfassung, was wir gerade gesagt haben zum Thema, was sind Fake News, welche Arten gibt es. Ganz wichtig, es gibt keine klare Definition darüber, was Fake News sind. Es ist wichtig zu gucken, was gibt es für unterschiedliche Wege und dass es sich immer wieder verändert, wie man sich das angucken kann, dass die Quantität der Fake News am Ende gar nicht so hoch ist, aber die Art und Weise, wie sie verbreitet wird, wurde angesprochen. Dass es in manchen Ländern gar nicht so viel Fake News gibt, aber dennoch die Zirkulation am stärksten ist und das Fake News als solche irreführend sein können. Aber auch, und das war der zweite Teil unserer Diskussion gerade mit dem Einspieler, ist die Form der Satire als Möglichkeit, Fake News aufzugreifen und sie auf eine witzige Art und Weise, die Leute auch unterhält, quasi aufzuarbeiten, um damit auch zu sehen, dass man sich auch über bestimmte Newskanäle hinaus auf der ganzen Welt damit beschäftigen kann und nicht nur darüber lachen kann, sondern sich auch dadurch wichtige, relevante Informationen nehmen kann, um für alle diese Themen relevant zu machen. Im nächsten Teil der Show werden wir uns damit Fake News und Donald Trump ganz intensiv auseinandersetzen. Es ist mir ja schon gekommen. Von daher bleibt dran und hört zu. Ihr hört den Radio Mikro Europa Live Talk auf der Wüstewelle. Zu Gast bei uns im Studio heute sind Martin Giesler und vier Studierende und Schüler aus Belgien, Spanien und Rumänien. Wir machen gleich weiter auf Englisch. In this segment, we want to draw attention to Donald Trump and his biggest fake news. Ever since the first time he used fake news in December 2016, declaring that him being an executive producer of Celebrity Apprentice while being president was fake news, Trump has tweeted about fake news more than 150 times ever since. On the one hand, fake news for Trump are credible news that he doesn't like. On the other hand, he posts false statements himself. So what does it mean when a leader of a nation so openly delegitimizes journalism? Martin Expert, what do you think?
Well, the problem with Donald Trump is that he didn't just delegitimize journalism. He actually kind of declared war on journalism. He had his staff saying, and he said it himself, that journalists are actually the enemy of the American people. So this hasn't ever been saying by a president of the United States before. So this is really, really, really a big problem for society because journalists are pretty much responsible for holding the powerful accountable. And if there's no trust in journalists anymore, then the society's got a big problem. And if the president is actually saying that journalists are the enemy of the American people, so what do regular people do about it? They're probably more in favor of not trusting the media. So this is a huge, huge problem in the United States, but we can also see that this is a problem that arises in Europe as well.
Okay, thank you. Bastian, what is your opinion on that?
I feel like Martin covered basically most of it, but I agree with him on the fact that the president shouldn't say something like this, shouldn't encourage the people to mistrust the journalist, because there might be fake news, but if the president shares fake news and if he encourages people who usually give good news to the people to mistrust those people, well, how can you, this way, how can you have, trustworthy, good news? I mean...
That's problematic, right? Yes. Ovidiu, what do you say?
Well, I think Trump is going to be more of a problem, not for the fact that he's calling the news outlets fake or promoting fake news. It's more like he's tweeting fake things, or he's declaring, well, unrealistic aspects of reality, or he's undiplomatic as a world reader. It's the same in Romania. So we have satirical publications which try to help the educated people, because that's the problem. You want to have the uneducated people to be more educated, but if you have the educated people more aware of the fact, maybe you could make them protest. Maybe you can make them more involved in the politics. So having satirical news, you could have people like Trump in all over the country, all over Europe, which declare war on journalism, but you have these kinds of publications, independent ones done correctly, which kind of draw focus on the fact that this leader is out of line, it's out of bounds, and you should put a stepping stone on him, making say either stop or correct or address the nation in a proper way, because it's a problem for Americans, but it's going to be a problem for Europeans as well.
Yes.
If another Trump will be born here, if another Trump will be born in Asia, another Trump will be born in Africa, because America being the great nation that it is, needs a leader that is diplomatic. It should be a leader that is fair and just with the world, not only Americans. So Trump is going to be more of a problem than the term of fake news, because fake news didn't appear with Trump. Mm. They were for hundreds of years, but Trump made it so oblivious, so outstanding, that now the world is taking stand to it. So Trump and fake news should be the same term after all.
Yeah, but and what do you think does it mean for contemporary media if Trump is this Twitter using bombardier for everyone? What does it mean for contemporary journalism?
I think journalism should do the guerrilla warfare. So it should do more independent articles, more hard fat articles. If not, it means the people should make their own blogs, their own vlogs, and explain in correct facts. So no opinions without facts. That this is very important. They should explain the reality. So if 1 million people, 2 million, 50 million people explain how reality works, it doesn't matter that one president says, no, this is wrong. No, 50 million people couldn't be wrong at the same time. So it means journalism should be done by the masses, to show the president that the masses have a choice, have an option, have an opinion that is fair, not like the president. Because if one guy who doesn't have experience in politics declares all of that, imagine what he will do after his second term if he wins. Mm-hmm. He's going to say, okay, I'm experienced. My right to express my opinions is fair. Everything I say is as it goes. So this is going to be a problem. And I think journalism should be more for the masses. So people should be more involved, more educated, and more aware of the fact that no one holds the entire power of the world.
Yes. In addition to that, journalists really need to make sure on which side they are standing on, because right now we have the problem that journalists sometimes really like that they are pretty close to the elites as well. And I think it's about time that journalists take a stand and make sure that that they are actually serving the people and not the elites, not the politicians. And they have to once again fight for the trust of the readers and the listeners, because that hasn't been a big issue for the journalists in the last decades. But it certainly is a major task for journalists now.
Yes, it definitely is. So let's give the word to Trump and listen to our second clip of our workshop that has been made and see what's happening there.
We will start by listening to a short audio file where Donald Trump rejects some questions he doesn't dare to answer from some media.
Can you give us a question?
Don't be...
Can you
no,
give
I'm
us a question?
I'm not going to give you a
can
question.
You can you stay categorical?
You are fake news.
You can hear how Donald Trump reacts when a CNN journalist wants to make him some uncomfortable questions. It's shocking to know he accuses the journalist to spread fake news when Trump is the one who is telling lies.
For example, he has often denied evidences about global warming, or he has accused Mexicans of being thieves and drug dealers. The most worrying point is that he develops his policies from his opinions and fake news. So, we can conclude that it's always hard to know what news are reliable, because some media are managed by Trump and some others are especially focused on blaming him and his policies. So, sometimes it's just a matter of faith.
At this point, after this reflection, we wonder, do you know any example of fake news spread by Donald Trump?
Do you think you know how to detect fake news? How do you detect them?
Yes, how do you detect fake news? That's going to be part of our later discussion. So let's just stick also to those closing questions asked in this segment and stick to this, what we've been asking ourselves this entire time, and go further and ask, can we take anything Trump says serious anymore? What do you guys think? Julien, what do you think? Can we take anything serious anymore, what he's saying, what he's tweeting?
No, I don't think we can take anything serious about him, of his tweets. But I do think we can rely on the press and rely on media. But yeah, Trump is a difficult one.
Yes, he definitely is.
I mean, when it comes to Trump, there are great chances that anything he says that's actually fake, because it's somehow on his agenda to play with the media and to actually make things up in order to have the media cover him, be busy about it. And if you're not really sure if you're about to read something that might be fake or not, I would encourage you to actually do some work. You can rely on the media, and media should play a big role in constructing well-grounded news. But you have to maybe do a little work on your own and read other sources, ask questions, find out about the motivation of a publication, about politics, politicians as well. So I'm not so much in favor of just looking at other institutions, but I'd suggest that everybody's got to do a little work on his own as well.
All right, exactly. Ossian, do you want to add to that?
I just want to say that I don't feel that social media should be used to share news information. It's good sometimes, but sometimes it's used in a way that it could be really bad for the people, and it's easier this way to share misleading news, mm-hmm. and to share fake news. And as far as Trump is concerned, I feel like using social media, for example, Twitter, is not the right way. I feel like for his political discourse, it's not, 140 characters are not enough, mm-hmm. and that's not a way to spread a message, or it's not the good medium for his political discourse, I feel.
Yes, exactly. So when we stick to Twitter, is the fact that Trump uses Twitter so much, is that the actual problem, the use of Twitter, or is it the fact that he gets so much attention for using it? What do you think, Ovidio?
I think Twitter has no blame on it, because Obama as well, mm-hmm. because being the president guarantees you the official Twitter account for mm-hmm. the POTUS. But Trump is using Twitter like his own daily journal. So, dear Twitter, today I met Kim Jong-un. Dear Twitter, today I met my wife. So, it's not the platform on itself, because Twitter, having 140 characters, managed to help the Arab Revolution, managed to help the Republic of Moldova, managed to help a lot of countries when the internet was at risk. So, Twitter as a platform is helpful. It's the guy using the platform wrong, or not in a presidential way, because if you're the president, you do not explain your thoughts in 140 characters. If you're the president, you should address the nation officially with the television in front of you, with the photographs in front of you, because when he tweets, he makes mistakes. He doesn't correct them, because Twitter doesn't allow you to correct the mistakes or grammar mistake. And it means he shows his flaws. Mm-hmm. And when you're president, you should be the institution, not the man behind mm-hmm. the function. So Trump is using Twitter like his own personal agenda, just to express his wild thoughts, because they're not rational thoughts per se. I mean, he uses tweets. If he doesn't manage to fit 140 characters, he pushes dot, 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 and afterwards he continues to the next tweet. That's not professional. That's not presidential.
No, it is.
Yeah.
No, it is. No. It is professional. You can use it any way you want, and it's 280 characters, by the way, now, so they just change it. I think Trump is much in favor of it. I'd like to say one thing to Twitter in general, because I think, yes, Twitter is an interesting platform for anybody who wants to have his message spread. But Twitter did some mistakes as well, because they have their rules, and one of the rules is you are not to threaten any other people via this platform. And Trump does it all the time. So Trump is threatening the media. Trump is threatening journalists. Trump is threatening countries. He is threatening North Korea to nuke them or to wipe them out or whatever. And Twitter might be in the position to actually say, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Trump, but this is not happening on our platform. Maybe you want to move on to another one. But they're not doing it. So they're just tolerating it. And I think they are certainly to blame that they let this things happen, because they do stop other people for doing so. And the second thing I want to say is, or underline is, that Trump is a media man. He knows how the entertainment industry is working. He knows very well how the media industry is working. And so he really, really makes use of Twitter by telling the journalists in the very morning, or giving the journalists in the very morning something they can fuss about and make a headline. And Trump knows about the hunger of media outlets for news stories. And he really, really, really knows how to play with it. And he knows how to set an agenda via Twitter. And this is really professional. So, that's just two more thoughts.
Yeah, it's professional for a man who has been in the spotlight for more than 20 years, but it's not professional for the president. So you cannot see Obama doing the same thing. You cannot see Clinton or Bush doing the same thing. Okay, Bush had his flaws because he used the wrong words when it shouldn't have. But Obama was a perfect oratoric man. So he had his speeches, which were perfect, almost perfect. But Trump, being a media man, shouldn't act on his media agenda onto the American people. So if he has his agenda with North Korea, if he has his agenda with Russia, with Europe, he shouldn't put that agenda from a media perspective. So you should transmit your message to media outlets, and then you should explain in an official document.
I don't know, that's the old way. I don't know, if Obama did it like this, but in with other reasons, then maybe would be more in favor of him doing so. But with Trump, it's different, because we don't really like what Trump is all about. So, yeah.
Okay, thank you very much for that. We have a heated discussion already. Jaime, do you want to add to that?
Of Twitter, I don't know, because I don't use Twitter.
Yeah, good for you.
In my opinion, Trump used some media to express his lies, as such as about global warming, opinion about Mexicans, etc. And there are some other media that are just focused on blaming him about everything that. At the end, you don't know how media you can trust, and that is my opinion.
Alright, thank you very much. So, dann möchte ich jetzt nochmal für die deutschen Zuhörer zusammenfassen, was wir hier gerade alles besprochen haben über Trump und seine Fake News. Also erst haben wir festgestellt, dass natürlich Trump den Krieg gegen Journalisten erklärt hat und dass es ein ganz großes Problem ist, wenn es darum geht, wie die Bürger Vertrauen finden können in die Medien, in einen Präsidenten, und dass es einfach nicht die Art des Präsidenten sein sollte, der das genauso tut, der seine Meinung, der sein persönliches Leben so auf Twitter teilt, sondern vielmehr ein Präsident sein soll, der in seiner offiziellen Rolle treten sollte, wenn er die Medien nutzt, um seine Message rüberzubringen. Das Problem dabei ist halt eben vor allen Dingen sein Tweeting und seine unrealistischen, nicht diplomatischen Tweets, die er immer wieder rausschickt, was eben gerade die Dichte der Bevölkerung mit einer niedrigeren Bildungsstärke anspricht, die dadurch eben denken, das ist es, was es sein muss, und der Einfluss viel zu groß damit wird auf die Leute. Und wenn so jemand wie Trump eben auch in Europa als nächstes groß werden könnte, kann es eben weltweit zu großen, großen Problemen kommen. Für den Journalismus sollte das dann daher heißen, dass der Journalismus viel mehr Unabhängigkeit bräuchte, so die Meinung hier, mehr Fakten herausbringen sollte in unabhängiger Form, die dann natürlich auch irgendwie gecheckt werden müssen. Aber ein Präsident, der ohne Präsidentenerfahrung so weit geschafft hat und das alles weiter so nutzt, was könnte das dann bedeuten, falls er eine zweite Amtsperiode gewinnt? Das sind alles Fragen, die wir uns stellen und die dann die Journalisten eben dann auch mit einrechnen müssen, wenn wir uns fragen, was können wir tatsächlich annehmen von dem und was nicht? Und da ist Twitter als Medium einfach viel zu klein und eigentlich nicht der professionelle Ort dafür, wo Trump eben rüberkommen sollte als eher Entertainment-Mogul und nicht Präsident oder Politiker, der er vorher war. An der Stelle wollen wir dann auch gleich weitergehen zum nächsten Teil unserer Shows, wo wir uns damit dann auch beschäftigen werden, wie wir Fake News entlarven können. So, stay tuned. Ihr hört Radio Mikroeuropa mit einem Live-Talk auf der Wüstenwelle. Meine Gäste heute sind Martin Giesler sowie 4 Studierende und Schüler aus Belgien, Spanien und Rumänien. Willkommen zurück. So, let's switch to English again. First of all, we would like to listen to a clip that has been produced during the workshop about how to debunk fake news, the topic of our session now.
How should we debunk fake news?
Is debunking actually the way to solve fake news?
Debunking may just alleviate the impact of fake news or even reinforce people's viewpoints, right? Shouldn't we go for a more long-term solution that's proactive rather than reactive?
We cannot make people's mindsets change in the short term, though, can we?
No, but what is a long-term solution?
Educating the younger generations, those who are so familiar with the consumption of news online, won't they be able to convince the elders of the right way?
But what is the right way, though?
More critical thinking. Try to make people question what they read, to think about the intentions of the person writing it, to think about the reason for writing the article. Is there another reason for the article besides conveying objective information? Are there numbers or statistics to support the theorem that's posited? Are there other people able to confirm these numbers or statistics? Or are they just fabricated meretricious nonsense?
Yeah, sure. How about workshops in schools with people who can help teach children how to read news with a critical eye?
Ah, you get what I'm saying.
Oh, Trump just decided to move the German-US embassy to Tübingen. He says because he likes the Christmas market so much.
Who doesn't like the Christmas market as much? So, let's talk more about this. The term fake news has brought attention to the need for media literacy, I think. However, as we have discussed before, the term is incredibly limiting because it simplifies a complex information ecosystem in often very confusing terms. But as the clip suggested, there are little to none fast solution to that, but rather long-term options like education and educating the next generation about it. So what do you guys think? Do you think that the problems with fake news accelerate our need for media literacy from an early age on? And are there already actions set in motion in your particular home country in order to improve media literacy with the younger generations? Avia, do you want to start?
I think being educated allows you to understand reality in a more complex manner. So you could understand that something is fake after you documented yourself, after you involved yourself in the subject, after you researched and thoroughly analyzed the particular aspects of a fake article. Sometimes it's pretty obvious to spot a fake article. Mm-hmm. It's simply fake. So, I don't know, a cat drove to Mars. But having educated...
It didn't.
Having an educated audience allows you to have an educated population that allows you to have an educated democracy. So having dumb people allows you to vote for dumb people, mm-hmm. And those dumb people should control you. But media literacy is not more of a subject. It's more like it should be an obligation. Like internet is a right for everyone to use, media literacy should be an obligation for the entire population to be aware, because from the morning until night, you consume media, whether you like it or not, whether you want it or not, because you're bombarded by hundreds of thousands of media channels, be it online, print, press, or TV. So that's why having media literacy taught from the early age and constantly evolving with the media, so you're not sticking to the traditional press, you're going all around the press to see how it evolves, how it could manipulate you if it does, and we know it does, you could be a very involved citizen. You could know who to vote, why you should vote for the guy, why you should not vote for the guy, why you should protest, because protests now are the most efficient ways of Romania to stop certain laws to pass, because there's no other option for the citizen to stop a law than to protest in the hundreds of thousands of people to express their anger, to express their sorrows. So having read about those laws in the media, having involved themselves in the subject, they would allow for the regular citizen to be aware of the fact that the cat didn't go to Mars, that your politician did pass a law that made you not safe in your own house, that the politician promised you salaries and afterwards you'll be bankrupt. So having this kind of subject taught from the early age would allow you to have a very correct democracy, have a very mature democracy.
Okay, thank you. Bastian, do you want to add to that? What about Belgium? Are there any kind of actions being taken towards children being more literate in media, to be more educated with them?
I completely agree with what has been said. I also think that we should be educated at an early age, because we can't receive that many informations and not be educated in order to see what's wrong and what's right, what's false and what's true. But I feel like in Belgium and in France, where I've done most of my education, this is not already done. I feel like we should be educated sooner. And when I got to the university, that's when I really realized how much is hidden from us, how much is how media manipulate the information, and how even if it's good news, even if it's not fake, we don't see the complete reality of it. So I feel like when you get to an age when you see the information differently, when you go to a communication school where you learn more about information, you see the word differently and you see the word of media differently, and you realize how wrong you were before and how little you knew about information and how it worked.
Mm-hmm. Yes, do you agree to that, Julien, for Belgium?
I completely agree, because before I started my journalism education, I didn't research about anything what was on the news. Now we have to double check the things that we are making and writing. So I think it is that we should learn children or youngsters to be more active about researching.
Yeah, and their media use.
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
So, I do understand it, and on the one hand, I do see that we ought to improve the media literacy of basically everybody. But then, on the other hand, I don't really know how to make that possible. Because if I go to a doctor, I want to be sure that the doctor knows very well how to do a surgery on me. So I'm not going to study anything before and say, well, maybe you want to do it differently. So I just trust him. And if I go to a supermarket and buy my food, I'm also expecting the food to be not harming me. And so maybe I don't really need something like a driving license for media or something similar, because I have the right to actually be able to trust the media as well as I trust my surgeon, as I trust the supermarket. And then TV has been around for quite some time, radio has been around for quite some time, and all these new tools, Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, etc., where you can express and broadcast yourself to thousands and thousands of people, has just been around for 10 years, 13 years. I think Facebook has been around for 13 years now. So we might need some more time to actually get comfortable with these new techniques and come up with like a more secure way of dealing with them. And I think this is going to happen, and it just needs some time. And I think we're asking the right questions now.
Mm-hmm. So, as the clip suggested, there are just very little short-term solutions, but only long-term solutions. Do you think there are any short-term solutions that we can do right now in order to try and debunk fake news, apart from what is already being done?
Yeah. No, I'm just laughing because sometimes it works out differently than you expect, because on Facebook, for instance, you have the all these initiatives that are trying to debunk fake news, that are trying to figure that are actually taking care of content that's been flagged by other people. And what did happen? A study suggests that all the news that didn't get flagged is taken for granted, so that people actually think, oh wow, this hasn't been flagged by the news initiative debunking fake news, so this ought to be real news. So and this is quite a problem, because all these initiatives can't cover all the content that's been posted on Facebook. So it's rather about maybe 0.5% of all the content that's up there. So if people take all the other content for granted, so these initiatives aren't worth anything. So sometimes it's a little bit complicated coming up with short-term solutions. So yeah,
I think if you use censorship to cover the news, then you'll think people are rioting for the fact that they're not having their right to express themselves. So censorship or stopping the news from a standstill is not the way to go. So you either allow the fake news to proliferate all over the internet, but you have the audience which realizes that these are fake news. They stop consuming them. The website is without visitors. So their purpose would be without fault, because you have audience that would consume the right media. They would consume the correct media. So having the short-term goal would be just to demonstrate that you have the power to stop something, but you do not have the power to literally see the cause and the effect of you stopping the phenomenon. You just stop the dripping effect, because you stop, 100 outlets, you stop 2,000 outlets, but you can possibly stop 2 billion people from expressing themselves.
And who's going to decide on it, right? So who's going to decide on what people should read and what not? So I don't want my government to be the one in charge of deciding on the information I'm obliged to read. For instance, I don't know, like saying, Süddeutsche and Zeit, et cetera, is okay, but you don't want to read this and that. And so who's going to decide on that? That's a huge problem. You don't want to have the platforms to decide on it. You don't want to have Mark Zuckerberg and his colleagues decide on what information is spreading. And you don't want the government to decide on it. It's a major task right now.
It is, it is. So, für unseren deutschen Zuhörer an der Stelle nochmal eine kleine Zusammenfassung, was gerade diskutiert wurde. Wir haben uns damit beschäftigt, wie wir Fake News entlarven können, und haben zuerst Fragen gestellt der Mediennutzungskompetenz und ab wann man Mediennutzungskompetenz quasi unterrichten müsste. Was gar nicht so einfach ist, da es halt einfach mit den neuen Medien einfach eine solche Komplexität dazu geworden ist, dass man das schwer machen kann, aber vor allen Dingen darauf achten sollte, dass man das Erkennen von Fake News frühzeitig unterrichtet. Sollte. Also, dass durch dieses Erkenntnis der eigenen Leute keine Zensur entsteht darin, was gesagt werden darf und was nicht gesagt werden darf, sondern die Nutzer selber es machen können, selber darauf aufmerksam gemacht werden können. Ihr seid diejenigen, die es entscheiden können, und müsst nicht hörig sein zu einer Instanz, die euch sagt, was ist richtig und was ist falsch. Denn die Medien sollten eigentlich auch weiterhin eine mögliche Instanz des Vertrauens sein, dem man vertrauen kann, aber eben dann auf der Ebene der Nutzer muss dann die Aktion liegen, um zu schauen, was kann ich tun, kann ich dem vertrauen und wie kann ich dem selber nachgehen. Also es gibt keine wirkliche Patentlösung, um das kurzerhand zu machen oder langfristig. Man muss einfach schauen, wie wir das jetzt eben mitbekommen. Man darf ja auch nicht vergessen, dass eben diese ganzen neuen Medien auch wirklich eine ganz junge Erscheinung sind, die erst seit ein paar Jahren, 13, 15 Jahren wirklich da sind. Daran müssen wir uns auch einfach noch gewöhnen. Dafür brauchen wir auch einfach noch mehr Zeit. So, jetzt kommen wir zu unserem nächsten Segment. Darin werden wir uns beschäftigen mit Fragen, wer denn am Ende eigentlich von diesen Fake News profitiert. Ihr hört Radio Mikroeuropa mit einem Live-Talk auf der Wüstenwelle. Meine Gäste heute sind unser Experte Martin Giesler sowie 4 Studierende und Schüler aus Belgien, Spanien und Rumänien. Willkommen zurück und wir machen gleich weiter auf Englisch mit unserem Segment Wer denn eigentlich profitiert von Fake News? So, let's start off by listening to the clip produced during the workshop about profiting.
Many people benefit from fake news in different ways. First, there are the politicians. We can use the example of the Brexit in England. Nigel Farage admitted just an hour after the Leave vote was confirmed that it was a mistake to promise that £350 million a week would be spent on the NHS if the UK backed a Brexit vote. This information had a big impact on the voters who might have chosen differently otherwise. On the other hand, we have fake news fabricators. They share false news in order to earn money. In November of this year, an anonymous source described in unprecedented detail a series of tactics he uses in order to create viral stories for financial gain. In an interview with an online publication, he shared a recent incident in which he created a story involving a celebrity with hundreds of thousands of followers on Facebook. Eventually, the story was taken down, but not before the source had managed to make not less than $20,000 out of it. So these are just 2 examples of how people benefit from fake news. There are many more ways besides spreading a misleading message and making money out of it.
Yes, as the clip suggests, there are politicians who benefit from fake news, but also fabricators who share fake news in order to earn money. So fake news, as such, are not just cheaper to produce, but also easier to disseminate now via the internet. Do you guys agree that those are the major groups or profiteers from fake news, or are there others who benefit from fake news? Are there just politicians and fabricators, or are there other groups who benefit from fake news? Astian, what do you think?
I feel that politicians and the people who write those fake news, the fabricators, are the main groups, but there are also so many people who benefit from it outside of this box. For example, people who would benefit from it are would not do anything against it would be, for example, the social media. They sometimes benefit from it in some way, but they also allow it to be spread on their platform and for people to read them, and it's really accessible to everyone, and nothing says that it's wrong, that it's false, that it's true, or so we have access to an information, but we don't know if it's the right information or not. And as Mark Zuckerberg said, he actually said that he was in nothing responsible for those fake news spread on his platform, and that during the election of Trump, for example, he and his platform weren't responsible for anything, and someone who would think that would be completely wrong. But there are also, I feel like if someone has and is responsible for a platform and a social media on which, that is really expanding and everyone can read those information, everyone can have access to it, should be responsible also to regulate all this information. And they say that they've taken action, they've started to take action on this, but I'm not quite sure at which extent.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you very much. Martin, do you want to add to that?
There'll be another round of the radio show to elaborate on, yes, on this topic, what action the social media platforms are actually taking in regards of getting rid of those fake news. But I'd stress that they do profit from it very well. It's perfectly clear that there are no real incentives for Facebook to change the way people spread content on their platform. It's part of the game. It's part of their business model. And I'm really curious about the future of fake news, because I think there are going to be quite some other players that are trying to profit from spreading fake news as well. I mean, you could look at the commercial side of it, having brands tell you certain news that you I don't know are better off with using this or that product. So is this already fake news? Is it just a commercial? Is it something we got used to it because we get tricked by the advertisement all the time, or aren't they obliged to tell the truth as well? So is this something we are going to see more often because to finish that thought, because the media is going to be playing a big role for commercial companies as well, because they are coming up with websites on their own, they are coming up with content that people should read and inform about the products they have, and there's so much untruthful things going on. I'm really curious about how this is going to develop.
Another player I think no one is watching is in Romania. I think in Europe it has a counterpart. It's called Factual.ro or PolitiFact. It's a player that uses fake news to debunk them. So without the fake news, they won't have a reason to exist. So they take declarations, they take fake news, they put it to their screen, and they explain the context. For example, the cat went to the Mars. Afterwards, they explain why the cat couldn't go to Mars. So every declaration of a politician in Romania, they debunk it. So they use fake news to educate the people. So this is kind of profiting for the better reasoning or the better understanding of fake news. So having a platform to debunk them is a way of profiting from the existence of something. So fake news, I think...
they're not making any money out of it.
Romania, they're not making money, but I think they're making... a social status, or they earn respect.
Yeah.
So no one is, I think, in Romania is able to say that platform is guaranteeing you they're lying, because anything they say, they put the constitution as an argument. They put the laws as an argument. For example, if a politician has a law, they explain why the law isn't fake or real, because they put the article of the law in the constitution.
Okay. Das nochmal kurz zusammengefasst für unsere deutschen Zuhörer an der Stelle. Wir haben noch dazu gesagt, dass Social Media durchaus auch davon profitieren können, wenn eben Werbeanzeigen geschaltet werden, wenn es weitergebracht wird, wenn dadurch die Plattformen sich vergrößern. Und auf der anderen Seite haben wir auch noch eingebracht, dass es eben auch solche Plattformen wie PolitiFact gibt, die davon profitieren, dass sie eben Fake News aufdecken können. Zum Schluss unserer Show wollen wir doch dann aber nochmal zeigen, dass wir im Rahmen des Workshops auch auf den Tübinger Weihnachtsmarkt gegangen sind und selbst Fake News verbreitet haben. Und nach der bevorstehenden Unabhängigkeit des Freistaats Bayern gefragt haben. Hört selber mal rein, was die Tübinger dazu gesagt haben.
Ja klar, das ist für so einen Freistaat Bayern wäre das natürlich wahrscheinlich schon eine gute Sache erstmal, aber die Konsequenzen, mit denen sie leben müssten, weiß ich nicht, ob es gut kommt. Das ist ähnlich wie in Katalonien, Barcelona und so. Also ich.
Völlig richtig. Bayern gehört weg.
Ist mir vollkommen wurscht, ehrlich gesagt.
Funktionieren könnte es möglicherweise, aber ich denke trotzdem, dass Bayern zur Bundesrepublik gehört, und von dem her ist für mich nicht sinnvoll.
Kann ich mir jetzt nicht vorstellen, dass das so stimmt.
Naja, das ist eine lustige Idee, aber ich finde es super unrealistisch.
Ist mir persönlich egal.
Ich bin nicht genug informiert, ich komme nicht aus Bayern, ich habe keine private Meinung dazu, also keine persönliche Meinung dazu.
Völlig richtig. Bayern gehört weg.
Weg damit!
Also wir sehen an der Stelle, die Tübinger sehen es auch so. Manche glauben es nicht, die anderen denken sich, weg damit, brauchen wir sowieso nicht. Es kann sich ganz schnell verbreiten, wenn man es einfach mal loslässt, und die Leute springen darauf an. But for our discussion, are there any closing remarks? I would like to ask just a very short statement from everyone. Can it get any worse?
Yeah, it can. It can always get worse.
Sure. But we need some media literacy. We need, I don't know, so many things. But it can always get worse. But if we do ask the right questions, then we can tackle some major problems.
If fake news is a trend, like most trends were, I think either it's going to go down or it's going to be in the norm, and people will get so used to fake news, they're actually going to start searching for themselves the real ones. Mm-hmm. So fake news, I think it's going to be more like the syndrome that announces you that you should be more careful, you should be more educated, and you should not take anything for granted.
Ja, wir sehen düstere Aussichten für die Zukunft, es kann schlimmer werden, aber wir können auch etwas dagegen tun. Damit wären wir heute schon am Ende unserer Sendung angelangt. Zu Gast bei mir heute im Studio waren unser Social-Media-Experte Martin Giesler, Ustjan aus Belgien, Ovidio aus Rumänien, Jaime aus Spanien, Julien aus Belgien auch. Thank you very much for this lively discussion. Thank you very much for coming to Tübingen to discuss this with all of us. Thank you so much. Dann haben wir natürlich noch an den Reglern heute saß Aaron Geiger. Und wenn ihr mehr über Radio Mikro Europa erfahren wollt, dann hier auf der Wüstenwelle, dann schaut doch einfach mal auf unserer Homepage vorbei unter www.mikro-europa.de. Alle bisherigen Sendungen findet ihr übrigens zum Nachhören in unserer Mediathek auf der Homepage der Tübingen Universitätsbibliothek unter vergil.uni-tübingen.de/mikroeuropa. Vom Mikrofon verabschiedet sich Julian Scherer. Auf bald!